ॐ मुकं करोति पाचालं भङ्गुं लङ्घयति गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम्। ऐ सल्यूट् कृष्ण दि एम्बोडिमेण्ट् आफ् सुप्रीम् ब्लिस् बै हूस् ग्रेस् द लेम् स्केल् माउण्टेन् एण्ड् द डम् बिकम् इलोक्वेण्ट्। May Krishna be the guide of our life. Om Shantihi, Shantihi, Shantihi. Peace, peace, peace. Bhagavad Gita. We are discussing the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is Dhyana Yoga. Chapter on meditation. Krishna is instructing meditation at the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He selected a wonderful place where 18 million people assembled to fight. It is a very noisy place. Arjuna was surrounded by his enemies, and Krishna was thinking that was the greatest time to give him instruction on meditation. He was facing trials and tribulations in his life. He gave him instruction. Tonight we shall read one word of Krishna. Especially that is a very important message of the Gita. Yoga bhavati dukkha. This yoga that I am teaching you right now will destroy your pain, suffering. So long we are in this world, in the dualistic plane, happiness and misery will be there. You cannot get absolute happiness or absolute misery in this world. It is impossible. Happiness and misery are the obverse and the reverse of the same coin. But meditation will take your mind to a level, to a plane, where dukkha, pain, suffering will not be able to touch you. That Krishna is trying to suggest Arjuna. Through instruction, through my guidance, I want to take you to a place where pain will not be able to touch you. Buddha's philosophy, sarvam dukkham dukkham kshanikam kshanikam swalakshanam swalakshanam shunyam shunyam. Whatever you see in this world, full of misery. Everything is a different species. Everything in this world is impermanent. And at the end, everything will merge into void. Dukkham. We face this suffering, pain in our day-to-day life. The Shankar philosophers also pointed out Dukkha Travighata Jigasa, being tormented by three kinds of afflictions, suffering. A question came in human mind. How to get rid of this pain? Tell me. What are those three kinds of sufferings? First, physical and mental. आध्यात्मिक, देन आधिभौतिक, फ्रॉम अदर beings, perhaps your enemies or tigers or lions or snakes or this and that. Adidoivika, accidental. For example, earthquake, accident, tornado. So human beings are afflicted from these three sources. So a question came in human mind, how to get rid of this pain? Practice this yoga. The yoga has a destructive power. It will destroy human suffering, pain, affliction. You see, mind monitors suffering. The mind monitors happiness. Both are experienced by the same mind. But yoga will make you such a beautiful mind which will not be afflicted, touched by affliction, pain. So Krishna was instructing Dhyana Yoga how to practice meditation. First he gave the preliminary disciplines. For example, posture, I think pranayama, other things he said. Now he is going to talk about the mind. Chapter 6, verse 14. Prashantatma vigatavir brahmachari vratisthitaha manasangyama matchitta yukta asita matparaha. Completely serene and fearless, steadfast in the vow of brahmachari, disciplined in mind and ever thinking on me, he should sit in yoga, regarding me as his supreme goal. Prashanta atma, prashanto means completely calm. That means that person mentally gave up external as well as internal objects. His mind is not craving for anything in this world. That is called Prashantatma. You call it Pacific Ocean, we call it Prashanta Mahasagar. And that is a calm ocean. So the yogi's mind is very calm. Second, these are the signs of a yogi. How to be a yogi? You must maintain the calmness of your mind, balance of mind. Second, vigatavi. You should not be fearful. Why are you afraid of? Whom to fear in this world? Vigatavi. He is completely fearless. Why? How? Well, he has nothing to lose in this world. Why are you fearful? Because you are afraid to lose something. He has nothing to lose. Sab chhodke, sab paave. His mind is in God. His mind in his own self, the Atman, which is within, which is completely fearless. So he has no fear. He holds his vows very strictly. What are those vows? That brahmachari vrata. Brahmachari vrata means he's a student of yoga. He practiced all basic spiritual disciplines prescribed by Patanjali, eight limbs of yoga. Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. He practiced all those eight limbs. Vigatavi. brahmachari vrata. The Swami, could you tell me some of the vows of the brahmachari? When we take our vows, after 5 years, we have to take first vow. These mantras are very beautiful. I shall tell you in gist. A brahmachari must be a clean person, well disciplined. He must be humble. He must not eat too much, sleep too much. That Krishna is going to tell you. He must practice the nature of a bee which sucks only honey. He should not follow a fly which sits sometimes on the switch, sometimes it sits on the garbage. Means, and he will not criticize anybody. He must serve his seed teachers. He must study the scriptures. He must practice meditation regularly. I remember, in India, the brahmacharis, those who are brahmacharis, they shave their head, but they keep a lock of hair. They call it shikha. So I asked one Swami, what does it mean? I see a shikha, you know, a small one here. I had a friend who was a... First, let me tell you, one of my friends, he was a cartoonist. He asked me, that what is that? He was teasing me. I said, you know, it is an antenna. I kept it here. I got all good vibration. It is all nice stations, you know, all radio stations. I get it here. So I get all good thought, good vibration through my antenna. I teased him. He is a cartoonist, you see. And I asked my teacher, what does it mean? What is the symbolical meaning of this tuft of hair the brahmachari keeps here? He gave two meanings. First meaning is that the monk Sannyasin does not keep any hair. Hair brings physical beauty. Lord, I do not want physical beauty. Give me inner beauty. So he shaves his head. And at the time of final vows, you will have to give up that shikha also. And shikha indicates that the thought of the brahmachari must soar high. It is symbolic. Brahmachari. A brahmachari, perhaps you have seen that the way I use my dhoti, this lower cloth, and the people, other people, they use it, they put on cloth, dhuti, in a different way. Then I asked, what does it mean? They call it mukta kacha. It means that you are not supposed to perform any kind of sacrifice which is performed out of desire. It means that you are free from that. They have all this Vedic interpretation of the behavior, their dress, their movement. Anyhow. Brahmachari vrate sthita. Prashantatma vigatavhi. I remember one Swami asked a question to Swami Turiyananda. Maharaj, could you give me an advice? What do you want? Tell me, what type of advice? How can I get peace in my life? Swami looked at him and said, I shall tell you to repeat a mantra. Will you do? Yes. Repeat. Vairagyam eva avayam. Non-attachment makes one fearless. You see, when mind becomes unattached to worldly things, it soars like a balloon very high toward God. our minds are pulled by worldly attractions, desires, so it does not soar high. This is the whole mystery. Spiritual disciplines will help you to understand the impermanency of the world. And as a result, you will be free from attachment. Manasangyama. When your mind is controlled to some extent, control it, don't let it go. You see, our problem is we practice our spiritual disciplines regularly. Then perhaps all of a sudden my mind goes to somewhere else. Suppose goes to a friend and a party. Again, mind is scattered. Again, 7 days, 6 days, I bring my mind under control. On the 7th day, I let it loose. Again, another 6 days, I work hard. I remember when we were a student, we had to solve a mathematical problem. Well, here is a pole, and that pole is greasy pole. A monkey holding that pole is jumping 4 feet and falling 3 feet. And after how many jumps he will go to 28 feet. Something, you will have to do all this calculation in the math. So you see, we are trying to reach our destination. We go 4 feet, and we come down sometimes 5 feet, 6 feet below. In this way, all through our life, we are trying to reach the destination. A back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. We sometimes cannot make steady progress because we don't have that steadiness. But if you want to be a yogi, you must have a steady mind. I must do it. He has very firm mind. He withdraws the mind from external world. Mat chitto. That yogi's mind always is on me, Krishna says. Pratyak chiti shagune nirgune ba. Or his mind always in that Atman, which is devoid of qualities, or in Shagun Brahman, and I am his goal. Such is the position of a yogi. Prashant Atma, his mind is calm, he is completely fearless, he is a brahmachari, well disciplined, his mind is withdrawn from the external world, his mind is devoted to God, and God is his goal. Junjanevam sadatmanam yogi niyatamanasaha shanti nidvana paramam mat sangstham adhigacchati. Krishna says, keeping himself ever steadfast in this manner, the yogi of subdued mind attains a peace abiding in me, the peace that culminates in nirvana. Krishna is now talking about the result of yoga. Sir, why should I practice yoga? It is a hard spiritual discipline. I could earn a lot of money instead of spending time for practicing meditation and yoga. Money is not your goal. You earn money for happiness, for peace. But seldom money can give peace. Peace cannot be bought in the market. Can you go and say in the Schnucks market, give me 1 pound peace, 2 pound nirvana, 5 pound joy? You can push your cart, this is joy counter, peace counter. It cannot be bought. Junjan Nevam Sadatmanam Yogi Niyatamanasas. That yogi whose mind is well collected, well disciplined, his mind is always attached to God. Wherever he goes, he thinks of God. Whatever he does, he thinks of God. Once Tantin asked M, what is the characteristic of, what impressed you most in Sri Ramakrishna's life? Tell me. M replied, the recorder of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna said, the most important thing impressed me in Sri Ramakrishna's life is God consciousness. That person always lived in God consciousness. I have not seen such a person in my whole life who dwells 24, who dwells 24 hours in God consciousness. Even I watched him when he was sleeping. In sleep also, ma, ma, ma. One day he was repeating ma, Hari, Krishna, Rama, Buddha, Jishu. He is chanting different gods and goddesses' names. Somebody says, sir, why are you repeating variety? Why don't you say only mother's name? Then he said, you see, you people are fortunate. You have husband, wife, children, family members. You live with variety people. But I also need a little variety, so I am repeating different gods and goddesses' names. You see, I like a little variety. Otherwise, it would be monotonous. Only it is possible for the divine incarnation. One of the devotees once said to me, Swami, sometimes I get a glimpse of the master, but just it is momentary, then it goes away. I told that person that, you know, very few people can stay in that state for a long time. Then I referred to Purna's life, one of the householder disciples of Sri Ramakrishna. He wrote a letter to Sri Ramakrishna. Sir, at night time I get so much joy, I cannot sleep. Whole night I pass without sleep. I cannot contain myself. I press my chest. So much joy. You know, if you get that type of bliss, joy continuously, your body will not last long. So God gives a little joy. And just to give you a little taste, that I told that person, it shows that you are on the right track. You are getting a little taste. That is the most important thing in spiritual life. Do you get a little taste when you meditate, when you pray, when you repeat your japa? Repeat your mantra. Do you get a little taste? As you eat some food, your tongue gets definite taste of that particular food. Simply in meditation, in japa also, one can get real taste. What is that taste? Bliss and peace. Sometimes you will find, you know, suppose your wife, your son or your husband or your relative or your wife wants to talk to you. You get pain. Oof, no. You just came out from meditation. If somebody starts to talk about the world or insurance or business or all these hopeless worldly things, you know, you will get terrible pain as if somebody is hammering on your chest. That shows that you are getting taste. just painful at that time to talk about the worldly. When you were in a high level at that time. That is Junjan Neva. Samahita Yogi's mind. With Sri Ramakrishna, with Yogi's mind is always in tranquil state. He does not like to disturb it. Any kind of vibration disturbs the mind of the yogi. Then another word he used. First he attains shanti, peace. Second, nirvana. Nih means not. Banam means coming and going. Nirvanam means no more coming and going. Shankara, Nirvana of Buddha is moksha in Vedanta. Moksha means liberation. So Shankara's liberation and Buddha's Nirvana are the same. Shankara put it there. Nirvanam mokshaha. It is in Sanskrit, in Shankara's commentary. Nirvana means moksha, liberation. Muchyati sarvai. He's completely separated from Maya. His mind is only attached to God, Brahman, Atman, which is within you. Completely aloof from this world. That is called Nirvana. What is Paramam Nirvana? Supreme Nirvana. How can I get it? Where does it stay, this Nirvana and peace? Mat sangasthama adigacchati. Listen, Arjuna, I tell you the truth. This peace and Nirvana is under my control. I give to them. Those who love me, those who follow me. It is in the hands of God. It shows that God realization depends upon the grace of God. Sri Ramakrishna told a beautiful parable. At night time, the police sergeant with a flashlight giving patrol in the city. The whole city is dark. Only that policeman has that flashlight. And when he focuses that light, with the help of that light, we know each other, we talk together, we see each other. But if you want to see the face of the policeman, you will have to pray to him. Hello, policeman, could you turn back that light on your face? If he is merciful, if he is kind enough to you, he can turn back the light on his face. Now you see me. Again, he will put the light on the world. Please remember, this policeman means that he is Parameshwar, God. The whole world is full of light, which is coming from Him. And with the help of that light, we know each other. We work in this world. So here Krishna says that vision of God is subject to His grace. Ask Him, pray to Him, Master, do Thou reveal unto me. Krishna also mentioned in the Gita, Tisam satadyuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam jinamam upayantite. Those who are yogis, those who think of me all the time, I connect myself with their intellects. I sharpen their intellect. I make their intellects one-pointed. So that it reach God. I do that. Chamebhyo lokibhyo innishate te sadhu karma karayati, sadhu chintayati. Whom God wants to give him a lift, he will ask, force that man to work good action, to think good thoughts. That means he is going to lift you, give you a lift. He is going to take you to Nirvana. मात्संस्थामधिगच्छति। नेक्स्ट टू वर्सेस आर वेरी इम्पॉर्टेंट बिकॉज इफ यू वांट टू बी योगी यू मस्ट बी मॉडरेट इन योर बिहेवियर, इन योर एक्टिविटी, इन योर ईटिंग, इन योर फूड हैबिट्स, इन योर स्लीप। नात्यश्नतस्तु योगोस्ति न चैकान्तम् अनश्नतः न चाति स्वप्नशीलस्य जाग्रतो नैव चार्जुनः। योगा इज नॉट फॉर हिम हु ईट्स टू मच, नॉट फॉर हिम हु ईट्स टू लिटल। इट इज नॉट फॉर हिम ओ अर्जुन हु स्लीप्स टू मच, नॉट फॉर हिम हु स्लीप्स टू लिटल। Follow the middle path. Krishna said, Buddha said the same thing. Sharir ki kashta diya mukti labh kara jaye na. One cannot attain liberation by mortifying the body. Ahimsa parama dharma, non-violence is a great virtue. Said Buddha. Once a devotee was fasting on Shivaratri day. Latu Maharaj saw his face and asked him, why don't you eat something today? Oh no, other people are fasting, so I am supposed to fast. He said, look, your whole mind is on food, I know, because you are hungry. You are fasting whole day. What is your goal? Is fasting is your goal or devotion to God is your goal? Recollectedness of God is your goal. Could you tell me? Your goal is God realization. So your mind is not on God. Your mind is on food. You are thinking when the fasting will be over, I shall eat. When the fasting will be over, I shall eat. Your mind is on food. It is better to take a little food and go and sit for meditation. He gave a very practical lesson to that devotee. In the 17th chapter, Krishna will tell us what type of food one should take. A yogi should. There are three kinds of food, chattik food, rajasic food, tamasic food. Krishna will explain these things in the 17th chapter of the Gita, I think 8 to 10 verses. Between 8, 9, 10, in these three verses, he will tell us about it. The next verse, there is a mantra in the Smriti Shastra, how to eat. Half of your stomach should be filled with food, one-fourth with water, and one-fourth should be kept empty so that oxygen, you know, air can move and can digest your food. Ardham purayet, half of your stomach will be with food, one-fourth with water, and one-fourth should be empty. The yogi, about yogi's sleep also, it is mentioned that the yogi is not supposed to sleep in the first part of the night and the last part of the night. As I told you, that the first part of night, everyone is awake in the first part of the night. Second part means 6 to 9, then second part is 9 to 12. That is for those who want to enjoy the world, that part is for them. And the third part means 12 to 3 o'clock is meant for the thieves and robbers. And from 3 to 6 is meant for the yogis, you see. They divided the whole night in that way. It is a Hindi saying, sap prahor me, pratam prahor me sab koi jaage, ditiyo prahor me bhogi, tritiyo prahor me chor jaage, chaturtha prahor me yogi. They have a verse, couplet, Hindi couplet. Anyhow, The next verse 17. Yuktahara viharasya yukta chestasya karmasu yukta sapna vabodhasya yoga bhavati dukkha. For him who is temperate in his food and recreation, temperate in his exertion at work, temperate in sleep and waking, yoga puts an end to all sorrows. That is beautiful. Yoga puts an end to all sorrows. Ahar, about food, about your recreation, about action. I remember when I was in college, I stayed with a doctor. His guru was a great yogi, Hariharananda Aranya, very famous yogi. He translated the yoga aphorisms of Patanjali into English. Which is he was a famous person. Anyhow, both he and his wife were disciples of that yogi. And I used to live with him. He once said to me that your Vivekananda did not get any liberation. He had some desires. But my guru attained Kaivalya Mukti, supreme Nirvana. He knew that I was very devoted to Swamiji. I asked him, how can you say that? Well, Vivekananda had so many desires. I want to start hospital, educational institutions, Ramakrishna Math, Ramakrishna Mission. He had many desires. And according to yoga scripture, that if you have desire, you cannot be a yogi. Then I said, I am very happy that Vivekananda had some desires. So I could. He was a very narrow-minded person. But he was a good doctor. My guru got Kaivalya Mukti. Your Kaivalya Mukti means supreme Nirvana, supreme liberation. From higher one will never return. And Swamiji wants to return. He wants to do good to humanity. They hate Karma Yoga. They think Karma Yoga means you are a inferior, person. Still you have desires. So you practice karma. And that person was so selfish. At least my karma yoga made me unselfish. He was a very selfish, self-centered person. But giving high talk on yoga, big philosophy about talking highly about this yoga. Anyhow, I shall read a passage from Swami Vivekananda's complete verse where this ahar, this food, has been discussed. It will give you some ideas from the non-dualistic Vedanta as well as qualified monistic Vedanta. You see, ahar, a food, you may think food, food, food. It is very important in spiritual life. Ahara shuddhau shatya shuddhi shatya shuddhau dhruva smriti smriti lambe sarva granthinam vipra moksha. In the Chandogya Upanishad, Sanat Kumara gave an advice to Narada, a saint. Look, if your food is pure, your mind will be pure. If your mind is pure, you will get constant recollectedness of God. If you get constant recollectedness of God, you will get mukti, liberation. So these are all interconnected. So food is very, very important. I shall read this from Complete Verse, Volume 4, Addresses on Bhakti Yoga. It is a very curious thing, especially to people of the West. He was talking about bibika, discrimination about food. It means, according to Ramanuja, discrimination of food. Food contains all the energies that go to make up the forces of our body and mind. it has been transferred and conserved and given new directions in my body. But my body and mind have nothing essentially different from that, from the food that I ate. Just as the force and matter we find in the material world become body and mind in us, so essentially the difference between body and mind and the food we eat is only in manifestation. It being so that out of material particles of our food, we construct the instrument of thought, and that from the inner forces lodged in these particles, we manufacture thought itself. It naturally follows that both this thought and the instrument will be modified by the food we take. There are certain kinds of food that produce a certain change in the mind. We see it every day. There are other sorts which produce a change in the body and in the long run have a tremendous effect on the mind. It is a great thing to learn. A good deal of the misery we suffer is occasioned by the food we take. You find that after a heavy and indigestible meal, it is very hard to control the mind. It is running, running all the time. There are certain foods which are exciting. If you eat such food, you find that you cannot control the mind. It is obvious that after drinking a large quantity of wine or other alcoholic beverage, a man finds that his mind would not be controlled. It runs away from his control. According to Ramanuja, there are three things in food we must avoid. First, there is jati, the nature or species of the food that must be considered. All exciting food should be avoided, as meat, for instance. This should not be taken because it is by its very nature impure. We can get it only by taking the life of another. We get pleasure for a moment and another creature have to give up its life to give us that pleasure. Not only so, but we demoralize other human beings. It would be rather better if every man who eats meat killed the animal himself. But instead of doing so, society gets a class of persons to do that business for them, for doing which it hates them. In England, no butcher can serve on a jury, the idea being that he is cruel by nature. Who makes him cruel? Society. If we did not eat beef and mutton, there would be no butchers. Eating meat is only allowable for people who do very hard work and who are not going to be devotees. But if you are going to be devotees, you should avoid meat. Also, all exciting foods such as onions, garlic, and all evil-smelling food. Any food that has been standing for days till its condition is changed, any food whose natural juices have been almost dried up, any food that is malodorous should be avoided. The next thing that is to be considered as regards food is still more intricate to Western minds. It is what is called ashraya, that is the person from whom it comes. This is rather a mysterious theory of the Hindus. The idea is that each man has a certain aura around him. And whatever thing he touches, a part of his character, as it were, his influence is left on it. It is supposed that a man's character emanates from him, as it were, like a physical force. And whatever it touches is affected by it. So we must take care who touches our food. When it is cooked, a wicked or immoral person must not touch it. One who wants to be a devotee must not dine with people whom he knows to be very wicked, because their infection will come through the food. The other form of purity to be observed is nimitta, or instruments. Dirt and dust must not be in food. food should not be brought from the market and placed on the table unwashed. We must be careful also about the saliva and other secretions. The lips ought never, for instance, to be touched with the fingers. The mucous membrane is the most delicate part of the body, and all tendencies are conveyed very easily by the saliva. Its contact, therefore, is to be regarded as not only offensive but dangerous. Again, we must not eat food, half of which has been eaten by someone else. When these things are avoided in food, it becomes pure. Pure food brings a pure mind, and in a pure mind is a constant memory of God. Let me tell you the same thing as explained by another commentator, Shankara, who takes quite another view. This word for food in Sanskrit is derived from the root meaning to gather. Ahara means gathered in. What is his explanation? He says, the passage that when food is pure, the mind will become pure, really means that lest we become subject to the senses, we should avoid the following. First, as to attachment, we must not be extremely attached to anything excepting God. See everything, do everything, but be not attached. As soon as extreme attachment comes, a man loses himself. He is no more master of himself. He is a slave. If a woman is tremendously attached to a man, she becomes a slave to that man. There is no use in being a slave. There are higher things in this world than becoming a slave to a human being. Love and do good to everybody, but do not become a slave. In the first place, attachment degenerates us individually, and in the second place, makes us extremely selfish. Owing to this failing, we want to injure others to do good to those we love. A good many of the wicked deeds done in this world are really done through attachment to certain persons. So all attachment, excepting that for food, works should be avoided, but love should be given to everybody. Then, as to jealousy, there should be no jealousy in regard to objects of the senses. Jealousy is the root of all evil and the most difficult thing to conquer. Next, delusion. We always take one thing for another and act upon that, with the result that we bring misery upon ourselves. We take the bad for the good. Anything that titillates our nerves for a moment we think as the highest good, but plunge into it immediately. But find when it is too late that it has given us a tremendous blow. Every day we run into this error, and we often continue in it all our lives. When the senses, without being extremely attached, without jealousy or without delusion, work in the world, such work or collection of impressions is called pure food, according to Shankaracharya. When pure food is taken, the mind is able to take in objects and think about them without attachment, jealousy, or delusion. Then the mind becomes pure, and then there is constant memory of God in his mind. It is quite natural for one to say that Shankara's meaning is the best, but I wish to add that one should not neglect Ramanuja's interpretation either. It is only when you take care of the real material food that the rest will come. It is very true that mind is the master, but very few of us are not bound by the senses. We are all controlled by matter, and as long as we are so controlled, we must take material aids, and then when we have become strong, we can eat or drink anything we like. We have to follow Ramanuja in taking care about food and drink. At the same time, we must also take care about our mental food. It is very easy to take care about material food, but mental food must go along with it. Then gradually, our spiritual self will become stronger and stronger, and the physical self less assertive. then will food hurt you no more. We want the result of yoga, but we do not like to go through the disciplines. You know, in Vedanta scripture, believed in Jivan Mukti, living free. They believe when a person attains the absolute, after illumination, he comes down. Why? You see, this person experienced existence, knowledge, bliss, absolute, that Satchidananda. At that time, that person's mind is full of bliss. And from bliss, he enjoys bliss so much. When he comes down, he sees the suffering of the people. And seeing that suffering, compassion comes in his mind. And he cannot check himself. He starts to help people. He wants to share which he has achieved in deep meditation, in samadhi. He wants to share. Hey, come, see me tomorrow. I want to see you. I want to talk to you. He has no motive. He wants to share some of his bliss, some of his joy. You see, he is not a selfish person that I got a mango, I shall eat it. I shall, you know, I am hiding so that you may not see my mango. I am eating. But this person cuts a chunk and shares. I ate so much mango in my life. Let them eat a little bit. So he shares. That means, you know, with Jivan Mukta, living free, they call it Baditer Anubritti Avidyaleshu. According to Vedantic terminology, Avidyaleshu. And a tint of ignorance remains in his mind. So long this name and form. Name and form means ignorance. So long this name and form are there, with the tint of ignorance is there. I sometimes give that illustration. It is very understandable and very helpful. You see, three gunas always remain together. There cannot be only sattva guna or only raja guna or only tamo guna. So what happens, if this person's mind is 90% sattva, pure, 5% rajas, 5% tamas. Let me give an example. Here is a 1000-watt electric bulb. On the top, there is a 2 tar mark. Tar, dark spot. If I say, is the place sufficiently lighted? Oh, yes, Swami, no problem, plenty of light. But those tar marks are there. They are not obstructing the light. So the mind of an illumined soul is 90% lighted. Rajas and tamas are there, otherwise body cannot remain. You see, three gunas must be there. With that little rajas and tamas cannot overwhelm that person. This is a very beautiful example. See this way, please. That he will never be overwhelmed by, because we, just like, you know, if some bacteria or some virus, if it enters in the blood cell, then the good, you know, that red, you know, that they attack. There is a fight continuously going on in human body. External virus are trying to destroy the body. Internal, that protecting force is trying to fight and throw them out from the body. Same thing in the spiritual realm. Rajas and tamas are trying to overwhelm you and to put you down. And your sattva quality is so up that sattva is now forcing those rajas and tamas down. So an illumined soul, his mind is full of sattva. So maya, attachment, attraction, temptation cannot touch his mind. He smiles. If anybody wants to tempt him, he smiles. My goodness. Prakriti, maya is ashamed to go to that person. That Swami Sri Ramakrishna mentioned about Vivekananda, he is blazing fire. Maya is afraid of him. He is moving with a sharp sword. He will cut Maya into pieces. What does it mean? It means his mind is full of alert. is alert, awakened, illumined. You will kick out the world. No attachment. Powerful soul. When he talks, he talks. He can generate tremendous inspiration and power and heat and light. Illumined soul. They live, not that they die immediately. You know, I'm talking about ordinary people. If we get a little joy, oh, we call everybody, do you know I have an experience last night? That means I am a small person. I cannot digest. But illumined soul. Om asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrittor ma yamritam gamaya, avirabhirma yedhi, rudrayate dakshinamukam, tinamam pahi nityam, om shanti shanti shanti. Lead us from the unreal to the real. Lead us from darkness to light. Lead us from death to immortality. Light us through and through. And guide us evermore with thy loving presence. Peace, peace, peace be unto all.